Our next case this morning is number 06-2638, Techemku against the Attorney General. Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My client, Murray Techemku, is a woman, a mother, an ethnic Mamaliki, and a citizen of Cameroon. Because she stood up against the corrupt government of Cameroon, she was subjected to harassment by that government. And not just harassment, we're talking beatings, detention, forced labor, abduction, physical mutilation, and even death threats. Murray seeks review of a BIA decision finding that, notwithstanding these events, she was not entitled to asylum or other kinds of relief. Now, to be clear, what happened here is not disputed. The IJ found Murray to be credible, and the BIA agreed with that. They just decided between them that whatever happened wasn't enough. The government tries to defend that position here on appeal, essentially taking a standard of review, this is a line-drawing sort of case approach, where two reasonable fact finders could disagree. Your Honors, we respectfully submit that wherever the line is to be drawn, we can't even see it from here. We're not even close. We respectfully request that the BIA be reversed and that the case be sent back, either with a finding that persecution has been established or, at the very least, for consideration of all the evidence before a ruling is reached. Now, persecution, this Court has said, is typically the nexus of a serious physical injury with one or more additional factors. Let me back up a little bit. There are at least three different instances that you could find constituted persecution here, all of which were dealt with in cursory and incomplete fashion by both the IJ and in no better fashion by the BIA. We'll start in 1993 in Mbanga, Cameroon. Murray was a high school student. She was the president of her local UNESCO chapter. And because she happened to live in a Bamaliki region, the government, which is not Bamaliki, and sees the Bamaliki as opposition, decided that they were going to stop paying her teachers. Now, of course, this happened right before a major national exam, which determines eligibility to go to university in Cameroon. And Murray did what you would hope she would do. As a president of UNESCO, she stood up, she organized a protest, she rallied her students to march to say, this is not right. We should be able to take this test, you should pay our teachers. And how did the government respond? They showed up with troops. They beat her with a matraque. They took her to prison. They violently interrogated her. They detained her for 3 days with no food and no water. She was the only woman in the cell filled with men. And so she was compelled to clean urine and feces from the floor. She also had, I think I said, no food or water, resulting in 14 days of hospitalization following the incident. It also resulted in prolonged psychological injury from which she's still recovering to this day. And what did the IJ say? The IJ said she was briefly held for 3 days and had to do some unpleasant cleaning duties. Your Honors, whatever
what
that is.
What he said was she had unpleasant duty of cleaning toilets, of which there were none.
That's right. And we would respectfully submit, Your Honors, whatever that is not a fulsome analysis of the record's evidence presented to the immigration judge. Moving on to the second incident, and I should say, by the way, after this, she was so traumatized she was sent to live by her family in Benin, a neighboring country, for 3 years. She came back once, and the family was scared enough that they sent her back to Benin. When she finally came back, she decided to enroll in university. 1998, she enrolled in the University of Duchang. She was studying psychology. Once again, this is a Bamaliki place, and the government becomes concerned that the psychology department is opposition. So they decide they're going to close down the department before the year ends, before she can get her credits. And what does she do? She holds a meeting. The meeting, they write down their names, they take attendance, they form a game plan. Soldiers interrupt the meeting. They take all the documents, including the list of participants. Nothing happens to her at that point. She goes home to her apartment, and in the night, soldiers come. The door opens. Men in a hat pulled down over their face so she couldn't see them enter, immediately shut off the lights, and begin screaming at her. She's dragged out, thrown in a van, taken to the woods. She doesn't know where this was at this point. Thrown down, beaten with a belt buckle, kicked with steel-toed boots to the point where she's screaming and crying. And the soldiers ask each other, well, now what do we do with her? She might go back to the village and report on us. and one gets an idea, maybe I know how to stop her from going back, this will stop her, and severs her left earlobe. She passed out. She woke up the next morning in the hospital, where she stayed for over 3 weeks. Again, what do we hear from the immigration judge on this? An upsetting event not comparable to any of the incidents described as mistreatment by the Seventh Circuit. Again, Your Honors, we submit that whatever this is not a fulsome analysis of the record evidence.
It's my understanding that the IJ also had corroborating medical evidence of her injuries, and there was also scarring to verify her testimony, and that was part of what accounted for the credibility finding that he made, that her testimony was credible.
That's right, Your Honor. In fact, not only do we have hospital records from within Cameroon, Mireille actually went and saw a doctor in Cook County here who confirmed that as a result of the first incident, she had a couple of teeth loosened from being beaten with the matrax, and the scarring from the ear, I mean, is what it is.
And scarring elsewhere on her body, as I understand
On her shins and her legs with respect to the belt buckles and the steel-toed boots, yes. Now, Your Honors, we would respectfully submit that on any fair reading of this record, a fact finder would be compelled to recognize that Murray experienced past persecution. Nor did the government offer any sort of evidence to rebut the presumption of a well-founded fear of persecution that that engenders in her. There was no evidence that Cameroon has gotten better since she left. To the contrary, the most recent State Department reports say it is no better. There was no evidence that she could relocate peaceably within Cameroon while still being, in fact, someone who stands up for her rights. In fact, to the contrary, the only way she seemed to avoid getting beaten, detained, and re-injured is by going into hiding every time she stood up and the government came after her. And in fact, it's worse than that now, because now we know the government's interested in her. They have a list with her name on it. They issued 3 summonses for her arrest while she was still there. Since she has left, they've issued 3 more. The only evidence, in fact, on future persecution, and again, even if there weren't past persecution, future persecution would be enough. A 10% chance of future persecution would be enough under the Supreme Court's decision. The only evidence on that here is that they're still interested in her. They've issued summonses. Her uncle, who is a member of the opposition party, wrote her a letter saying, don't come back. They're still interested in you. And people who protested with her and like her are still being picked up and killed and disappeared. Again, Your Honors, whatever happened here, it was not a full and complete analysis of the record evidence. If Your Honors aren't convinced that this was past persecution and that was, at the very least, a reasonable fear of future persecution, at bottom, there must at least be an opportunity for the BIA or the IJ to go through and piece by piece look at this. That is not what happened here. As the court put it in Kasaji, what happened here is essentially as if the IJ were handed a glass and said, isn't that a beautiful glass? And the IJ threw it to the ground, picked up a shard, and said, that's not a glass. It doesn't qualify. Whatever that is, it's not enough. If Your Honors will permit me, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. We'll hear now from the government.
May it please the Court. My name is Thomas Vitoros, and I represent the Attorney General. The evidence does not compel the conclusion that the 3 instances of separate abuse that Ms. Chemko described over an 8-year period in Cameroon constitute past persecution. Similarly, the evidence, her testimony that something in the future may cause her to be placed in conflict with the Cameroonian government is insufficient to compel the conclusion that she maintains a well-founded fear of future persecution. As an important initial point, petitioner attempts to cast this matter as merely an evaluation of what conclusions the record supports or what errors she believes or shortcomings the agency decision contains. However, the issue in this case remains, does the evidence compel the conclusion that she maintains a well-founded fear of persecution? It is Ms. Chemko's burden to demonstrate that no reasonable fact finder would come to the same conclusion as the board.
I'd like to know what more she would need to tell us about her life in the Cameroons. I would like to know what other atrocities the government would like to add to the list of atrocities this woman has undergone in the past, keeping in mind that Judge Zerbe found that she was a genuinely credible witness. So I'd be very grateful if you would tell me what other atrocities she should undergo. She does have another ear.
The government does not want her to undergo any atrocities. The fact of the matter is that Ms. Chemko experienced abuse, behavior that is not condoned, that is vile. The question for the agency is, does this rise to the level of persecution? And the agency evaluated the evidence in this case and determined that it did not.
The problem is that the agency's evaluation and description of the evidence bears no resemblance to the actual evidence. I mean, there's a substantial disconnect that can only amount to just a willful minimization of what this petitioner actually testified to and that the immigration judge said he believed. He skipped over most of it, as did the BIA.
Respectfully, the immigration judge did go through the facts of the case, did speak of the injuries that she endured. We have a problem on petitions for review now attempting to reweigh this evidence. Petitioner, for example, uses the word sever here, earlobe. This is clearly what the abuse she endured was not condoned and is vile behavior. The record says she has a cut. And the medical record says a serious cut. She testified to having her ear cut. Well, severed and cut are different things, and they are weighed by an immigration judge and by the agency. These are difficult areas for an agency to weigh, but upon review, it's whether the evidence compels a contrary conclusion, whether this cut compels a finding that she was persecuted in the past, even though it occurs in 1998 and she stays in Cameroon for three more years, in which time the government does not seem to target her for anything, is not involved with her life, allows her to enter the university. I think this is what's most troubling to the agency, not troubling to the agency, but undercuts her claim that somehow she is targeted for abuse because of a belief she has, that she is targeted for some sort of punishment.
Sorry. How do we deal with the repeated inquiries and admonitions that she encountered about engaging in political activity?
The three instances in which she is... We have two protests in which the government forcibly stops the protest, and one she's put in jail for 3 days.
There's a little more to it than that.
Not to minimize what happened. The jails in Cameroon are awful. The country report reflects that.
How about being made to stand in a prison cell with all men for 3 days without food and water and being forced to clean the floors with her hands of urine and feces, and then our immigration judge says, oh gosh, well, she had to clean the toilets. What are we dealing with here?
Your Honor, again, using the words like made to stand, the jails in Cameroon are clearly abhorrent in many ways, and she never says she was made to stand. She said there's no place to sit, and so she stood.
Doesn't that equal being made to stand if you have no place to sit?
The implication is that she chose not to sit. I'm not going to minimize what she went through in that prison, but now on petition for review, say things like she was made to stand, that she was not allowed food when she claims that she did not eat, that she was forced to clean toilets versus she was forced to remove bedpans or buckets, which seems to be what occurs in a Cameroonian jail. Importantly for the immigration judge, this occurred in 1993. She then lives in Cameroon for another several months, leaves for Benin without any influence by the government, returns to Cameroon, chooses to return to Cameroon, and enrolls in a public university. She endured abuse in a prison, but yet goes on with her life, and it doesn't appear the government of Cameroon is targeting her for punishment for a political viewpoint. And that is what the agency is looking for. Often people come with truthful stories of distasteful abuse that they endure in countries that do not respect the rights that we do in this country. And the complicated question for the agency is, do these rise to the level of persecution? And in this case, the only way this court can determine remand this matter is to say that the evidence as it exists in this record compels the contrary conclusion, that she has experienced past persecution. There's several allusions throughout the record to the idea that merely the failure to articulate in a certain manner the evidence or the judgment is in some way an error. Unfortunately, there's no law and or no regulation for the court to look to say, what does the immigration judge need to say? Clearly, in this case, the court, the board, and the immigration judge has said to this court, there's a standard for persecution, and this person has failed to meet it. And she had the opportunity to present her evidence.
Well, as my sister judge noted, what the immigration judge should not do is minimize, downplay, isolate the behavior that this woman was subjected to. And it's really Rashomon when you read the two various statements. And again, I have to note that the immigration judge did find that she was a genuinely credible witness. And if that was the case, then he should have used her statements regarding the dreadful treatment that she is under.
I don't think, although the immigration judge uses different words, I don't think there's any attempt to minimize the abuse that she endured or for the board to minimize that abuse. The inquiry is whether it meets the level of persecution, which is an extreme concept, which goes beyond, in the board's determination, a cut on the ear followed by 3 years of living in Cameroon going to the university, which is greater than being in a protest and being tear gassed and running away. It is greater than that. I don't know where that line is, but the board has said that these instances combined in this context over a period of time is insufficient to reach a well-founded fear of persecution. Now, the immigration judge, there may be things that the immigration judge could do better in to articulate that, but that in and of itself is not the error that this court could review, but rather, does this evidence, does the cut on the ear followed by these 3 years compel a contrary conclusion? Does the tear gassing and running away and the beating on the arm compel a different conclusion?
Do most people have scars that are left after a cut on the ear? Not in my view, but maybe so.
This has been given to the agency to review this type of thing. These are stories of credible stories are heard by these immigration judges on a daily basis and are adjudicated right then and there on an oral decision. So, although not reflected in the record, I do believe that there are plenty of cases where you have scarring, clearly emotional scarring from a lot of people that do not rise to the level of persecution. And this is a difficult area in which the agency has been given a broad range in which it can operate.
As have I.
But I think it is. I think there is some inclination to believe that these immigration judges or the board become desensitized to this information, and I don't believe that's reflected in this record in any way. But rather, each case is evaluated on its own, and there is an immigration judge's decision, although not using possibly the factual words that this court would like, that goes through that you have been heard today, and this does not meet the standard which the Attorney General has set. For these reasons and the reasons set forth in our brief, the petition for review should be denied.
How much time do you see? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Your Honor, and again, may it please the Court. The bottom line is that between 1993 and 2001, Murray spent approximately 13 months actively in school or trying to be in school, and about 83 in hiding, either with her parents not leaving the house or in Benin, because every time she went to school, she got involved and wanted an education. And every time she wanted an education, the government thought otherwise. And every time the government thought otherwise, she was severely injured. There's really no more to it than that. The only other thing I would offer is we heard a little bit from the government that perhaps she wasn't advocating the same political viewpoint every time the government chose to single her out and injure her. There's a Chenery problem because nobody in the agency relied on that as a reason not to grant her relief. But beyond that, again, what's clear here is a pattern of standing up for one's rights and being suppressed. Nothing more is required. We respectfully ask that the BIA be reversed, unless the panel has questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Our thanks to both Mr. Murray and to Mr. Futuris, and the case will be taken under advisement.